All right, so I'm in data world again, and who are you? What's going on?
My name is Jose Blakely. I am an architect in the SQL Server team working in the data programmability group.
Excellent.
And I work in the ADO.NET entity framework.
Excellent. Which we've covered on Channel 9 before. We'll
Right.
talk. Now, we have a very special guest here today.
Indeed.
Right? Who are you, sir?
Yeah, my name is Peter Chien. I'm right now a professor at Louisiana State University, but I'm also a visiting professor at MIT. And I have been working on this entity ownership model for the last 35 years.
Wow, 35 years.
Yes.
Because this is new, right? In the
Probably.
ADO.NET world, but the theory behind it is.
Yes. But it started that, but when I published that, it's probably 30 years ago.
Excellent.
Well, I think Professor Chen is very modest. Professor Chen is the inventor of the entity relationship model, which is now a part of the common vocabulary in almost every software engineer or database designer.
Awesome. So let's talk a little bit about this entity framework, this entity model. What exactly is it, and what, let's talk about it.
Sure. I think the main idea is when we try to model the world, we want to be as realistic, as truthful to what we see in the world. So if we look at this table, this room, what do we see? Do we see the table? We see chair, we see people, and we see a cup of water. And then we want to look at those are the entities. And then we also can see the relationship between the entities. For example, you and me and Jose, we're all here. So, right? So we are the same place, same time. We have this special kind of relationship. Okay? Somebody say, I think Chinese has an old saying to say, if you happen to be on the same boat, same bus, it's because 500 years ago you were working on something together and you accumulate this kind of special thing, so you happen to be at the same place, same time. So, in any case, there are different relationships with each other. For example, Jose and I, we are working in the same area, so that's one type of relationship. Some people are working in Microsoft, so that's a Microsoft colleague relationship. So those are the important things. Now, when we talk about here, the table, we see the cup is on top of the table, and that means there's a relationship, spatial relationship between the cup as well as I'm sitting on the chair. That's my relationship with the chair itself.
So, I mean, in essence, it's really what relational databases is all about, right? I mean, the relationship between data types. Now, the entity model adds this new concept of real objects, right?
Correct.
So, let's talk a little bit about that.
So, well, let's start with the relational model. The
Sure.
relational model was a way to formalize the way in which records are structured in the database using set theory, and then realizing that the way in which you query and update these collections of records is an abstraction over basically set operations. Okay? So by being able to program against data in terms of higher level abstractions, the concept of the relational algebra. It was possible to be able to implement systems that could actually perform much more efficiently over time. And it was also possible to create an abstraction that isolated applications from changes in the underlying structures of data. It was possible for people to, for example, add or drop indices or modify the internal physical structure of the database and yet maintain some degree of isolation, typically referred as data independence from applications. So that was an important contribution of relational systems. Now, when you start building applications, you start thinking about the proper way to define, how many tables should you have in your application? What kind of connection should you establish between the various tables, okay? Should you have a table for customer and a table for order, right? And then what are the relationships between the two? So that set of decisions, okay, what kind of tables you define, mm-hmm. is considered to be part of the database design discipline.
Sure.
And so there is theory behind all that. We hear of terms like normalization, mm-hmm. third normal form, which is again a set of principles that define how can you build these tables so that the database is meaningful in the presence of queries and updates, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens with normalization is that usually after you define your tables, the application starts looking at other concerns like what is the degree of concurrency that you want to enable in your application, okay?
Mm-hmm.
How many, what are the kind of workloads that are accessing portions of a particular table, and does it make sense to, for example, further partition that table so that you can enable a higher degree of concurrency mm-hmm. against the table? So it is not uncommon to see relational database systems that have very high degrees of normalization. So now when you are an application developer and you're trying to actually bring all these pieces together, applications have to be very aware of these normalizations so that they can build the queries in terms of multi-table joins to be able to kind of put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where the high-level abstraction of the entity relationship model can come to the rescue.
Mm.
The entity relationship model, as Dr. Chen described, allows you to model the real world, and applications tend to like to deal with concepts and abstractions that are closer to the real world.
Absolutely.
Right? So.
And we love, as programmers, we like, especially these days,
yeah.
mm-hmm. we like objects.
Correct.
Right? We like constructs that we can program against that make sense, that contain all this information. Our interaction between the two are easier for us than writing these complex SQL statements.
That's correct.
So let's talk a little bit about,
Sure. And I think let me just extending what Jose just said. The relational model is looking at the data and the relationship between the data. So you put things together into tables, and there's no structured way to say how many tables you should have. Let's say you have employee information data. You should put in one table, five table, two table. So one of the things developed in the last 20 years or so, so-called normalization. You try to apply some mathematical principles, algorithm, to make it 5 or 10 table, whatever it is.
Mm.
Now, but those are more like a synthetic type of normalization. So the entity relationship model is basically providing a high level, conceptually, and more natural to the user, to the developer, to see, if I see employees, okay, see the person, that's an entity.
Mm.
Okay, and so we just deal with the person itself. No matter the person is divided into 5 tables in the storage, in the SQL server, or whatever, they don't need to worry about that.
Mm.
And let the system worry about that. Okay, so that's the key difference.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I think the EDM and the entity framework is trying to provide that kind of high-level user interface.
That's awesome. So I mean the actual. So let's dig into this entity when we think
right.
of the term entity. I know I'm using object and stuff like
yeah,
that,
right.
but I know that there's a differentiation there. But
yes.
So it sounds to me like the entity encapsulates the relationships. Is that what you're saying? So if I want to deal with an employee construct,
uh-huh.
the relationship, the tables, that what that really means
right.
in the database is abstracted away from me. And I can just think about the employee thing itself.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Well. There is some there are some subtle differences. The entity relationship model
mm-hmm.
formalizes the notion that certain pieces of data are invariant to time. They exist on their own.
Hmm.
And so entities are the objects that have independent existence, so to speak.
Hmm.
Relationships are the ways in which these independently existing objects kind of connect to each other through time. Okay, so for example, I may be a student enrolled in a course, during 2006,
mm-hmm.
right? But I may not be a student enrolled in that course the year after that. So relationships are these first-class concepts
mm-hmm.
that have to show up in the model, right? That model, very important aspects of the data,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have always sort of like independent existence, okay? They are more like time-dependent.
Sure.
But it still is important to be able to deal and abstract that concept as a first-class concept in the model.
Okay.
So in the relational systems, for example, I mean, if the typical flow of a database design starts actually usually from an entity relationship type of model diagram, right, where you distinguish all these various pieces of,
sure.
of the data,
mm-hmm.
right? But then once you translate that model into a relational schema, the relational schema is just a whole bunch of tables. It's hard to distinguish which of those tables are entities and which of those tables are relationships. Sort of like the semantics is lost.
Hmm.
The conceptual model semantics is lost, right?
Hmm.
And so code usually deals with different types of tables differently because some of those tables are entities, some of those tables are relationships. What we are trying to do is we are trying to maintain those abstractions so that you know we can clearly identify the concept of an entity from the concept of a relationship and then be able to manipulate the data appropriately. So for example, relationships are the things that preserve certain constraints in the connection. So for example, you have a set of orders and a set of line items, and you want to be able to establish this one-to-many relationship between orders and line items, okay? You then attach the semantics of that connection to the relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say shipment. And then you say, well, it's a relationship that starts from one order to many line items, right? And the existence of the line items is surrogate to the existence of the order, for example. And then you capture that in the relationship description.
Hmm.
So if you want to navigate, for example, from orders to line items from a query point of view, then you know that you can go through that relationship to be able to gather
mm-hmm.
all the pieces that pertain to a particular order.
Sure.
And the system is able to reason about that semantics. So,
interesting. So I'm still a little confused about, I mean, I understand the difference, I understand the relational concept between data and tables, as you're describing. But where is the entity in what you were just describing? So you described relationships. What would the entity be in the model that you said? So the table, that's the entity. As you said, is that the person?
The order, for example,
okay.
is an example of an entity. A person or a customer
mm-hmm.
is another example of an entity.
Okay, of course. And so an entity will have relationship properties.
Correct.
Now, some tables will be just relationship data and not entities?
Right.
That's what I'm asking. So if I have a shipment, orders, line items, prices, whatever, you know, not all of those tables represent entities.
Correct.
Okay.
So, interesting question. Relationships also carry information. So, for example, if you attach data to a relationship, right,
mm-hmm.
and you start adding properties to a relationship, then the relationship starts looking like an entity, very much like an entity, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, that link, it has a different treatment in the model than regular entities, right? It's definitely, it's a piece of state that your system has to handle, right?
Yeah.
But the role of that piece of data as a relationship allows you to, for example, provide easy navigation across entities, right, through those links.
Okay. Excellent. So,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah, I think there are several things that's useful. One thing you ask about object and entities, you know, are they the same or different?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of the people out on the street, entity and object probably have similar meaning.
Mm.
But in terms of the programming world, the object-oriented programming take the concept of object and become a implementation concept. Okay, so when people talk about object, it's basically you take the entity, then you try to embed the so-called methods, the operation with it. Okay, so it's a way to make a projection. So let's say I'm the object, but whatever action I can do or action can be applied to me, I encapsulate that, become object. Mm. Now, what I try to explain to people is when you try to do the modeling, you should look at the entity, look at the relationship, entity independently, and some entity maybe have some dependency. But what I try to say, look at that, look at the relationship between them. And before you do this kind of packaging, okay? So when you do the packaging, it's a special way of looking at the world. Hmm. Okay? So to answer your question, in a casual meaning, entity and object the same, but because the programming your world, we use the object in a certain way, so have a special meaning.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah. So let's maybe talk about the way that, 35-year trajectory to where we are today, at least in the implementation that the SQL team has done. Let's talk about that path in the sense that, we have a basic concept, yeah. But let's talk a little bit maybe about a little bit more of the theory.
Sure.
And then talk about the implementation that you guys have done. So can we do that? I mean, it might be some whiteboarding. It might, whatever you're comfortable with.
Sure.
But I think we get the conceptual part.
Sure. Yeah.
And now let's maybe talk a little bit more about the theory, the math, if you want to go that far, and see how your great idea to where we are now in our implementation, and talk about that. Is that okay?
That sounds good.
Good.
Great.
Yeah.
Let us begin.
Well,
I mean, we can go in the backward direction if you want. If you want to talk about what you've done and lead back to what?
Well, fundamentally, the SQL Server product started as a relational database system. Okay, so pretty much the industry had proven that the relational model was a model that could be implemented efficiently. Mm-hmm. The level of engineering and research involved in the relational technology had matured to the point that it could sustain the needs and the workloads of real world applications.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So that was pretty much what happened in the early 80s,
mm-hmm.
right? And so Microsoft, about say 13 years ago or 14 years ago, decided to embarking into building a industry strength, enterprise capable database system.
Absolutely.
And so that's pretty much what we have been doing over the last 12 years or so,
mm-hmm.
right? Obviously, SQL Server is a very successful product.
Certainly.
And so on. And along the way, our customers wanted more than just a relational database system. They really wanted a more comprehensive data management platform. And so early, even from the time when we built SQL Server 7.0 in 1998, there were additional data-centric services that came along with the relational database engine. Things like business analysis, OLAP technologies, full text search, replication. They were all these are all services that have been part of the product for a long time.
Sure.
So, as we come to the point right now where we are, we realize that applications have the need to actually deal with data at a higher level of abstraction. So that, in some sense, brought the requirement to try to raise the level of abstraction of the database to entities and relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we also noticed that in our own, in the way we actually build SQL Server, the various data-centric services like replication, the SQL tools, and the reporting services, we found that all of these services want to deal with data, not in the forms of rows, but actually in terms of richer collections of things. So each one of those data-centric services invented, for example, replication invented the concept of a logical record to be able to deal with an aggregate of, you know, simple one-to-one, one-to-many relationships as a consistency unit for replication. Reporting wanted to build views that actually encompass more than a set of records from a single table, but really a bunch of records that came from multiple tables. And so they also built a view mechanism and a model that looked more like an entity model, right? Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. So we see that in various services that we ship as part of the database product, we find that we are building these mapping technologies and these supporting technologies to actually raise the level of abstraction of our data. So we realized that, and we decided that perhaps we should really raise the level of abstraction of the system to embrace a conceptual model, and we start with the entity model. Now, the way in which we think about supporting entities is there are different ways in which you can build an entity abstraction into a product like SQL Server. You can actually go directly into the engine and just enrich the concepts of the engine, right? Instead of talking about tables and record types, talk about entity types and entity sets, right? And introduce the relationship abstractions right there as well. Changing the basic constructs of a relational system is a big and expensive proposition.
Sure.
To be able to do that, the kind of innovation in the relational database takes a significant amount of time. Because you need to look at how those concepts that you introduce in the relational engine interact with all kinds of services and data management capabilities.
Absolutely, and what is compatibility as well?
Compatibility and all that. There is a big orthogonality matrix that has to be maintained every time you add a fundamental abstraction to the database. You want to make sure that all the utilities, backup, restore work in terms of these new abstractions. You want to make sure all your indexing capabilities work with that. Replication, synchronization, everything else works in terms of those abstractions. The stored procedure languages that you support inside the database are able to deal with those abstractions, right? So in looking at that, we decided that one way to actually raise the level of abstraction was to implement a client-side view manager, okay? So basically, all entities and relationships are views. The run-of-the-mill view that you can build in relational systems today.
Sure.
So we said, what if we start building a view abstraction into the database, right? And see what will be the pieces of that view, right? So fundamentally, at the lowest level, you have the relational SQL Server, right?
Yep.
And then we build this client-side view manager, which let's call it the entity framework. And so this abstraction includes, what is the model of data that we are going to support? Well, that is the entity data model. Okay. Now, if you are providing a richer set of abstractions, you need a query language for that. And so SQL is a very popular language. We say, let's extend SQL to be able to deal with entities, and also to take advantage of the extra semantics provided by relationships in the model to give us friendlier ways to navigate through relationships, so that we don't have to express joins. These verbose joins that had to put together all these different tables. So entity SQL was another piece of the puzzle. Now the next question is, how do you map these entities to the tables in the database? Well, here's where the mapping abstractions based on something that we call bidirectional views. come into play. So if you have, for example, a customer.
Okay.
So let's say you have a customer object, a customer entity. Say entity type customer. Right?
Yep.
And you know, let's say that it has an ID, it has a name.
Okay.
And let's say that it has another element called address. In fact, let's make it a list of addresses. This is what the application wants to model.
Okay. Yep.
Now, at the level of the database, let's say that you have two tables where all this information is stored. One is the customer table that has, you know, say ID, name, birthday, say.
Sure.
And then you have an address table that contains all the information about the address, you know, the street, the city, and some other things, right? And let's say that you have a way to say customer ID, to actually relate. A customer may actually have different locations, different addresses, right? Maybe a customer who has multiple offices, and you want to capture that information. So there is a one-to-many relationship between these two. Okay?
Yep.
Now, in order to build this customer abstraction, you can define a view, okay? And one way to abstract this view is to use SQL.
Sure.
to define the view, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically the view is, you know, select and then all the properties, ID, name, okay? And then you can say set of address and then from customer table, cost table, see, and here we need to do a join. It's a left outer join, address E, right?
Yeah.
Where the ID of the customer and the custom and the address ID match.
Okay.
Right? So that basically brings these two things together.
Yep.
And you can group this thing by the ID. So if you look up to this point you have brought together all the customers and their related addresses.
Yep.
And you are actually even capturing customers that may not have an address because of the left outer join semantics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Then what's left to do is to group together, bring together the scalar properties of the customer as well as the set-oriented properties of the customer, the group of addresses that match. And this could be an empty set for cases where customers have no registered address.
Sure.
And this is the way in which you capture the way in which you build entities out of the relational database. But the way that you can formalize this assembly of entities in terms of high-level set-oriented operations is what's key about the mapping infrastructure that we have here. So I'm talking here so far about the read, one-directional way in which you can go from tables to entities.
Excellent.
You have to also worry about the other way around, which is the update.
Yeah.
What happens when you try to update these views, and how do you make sure that you can unambiguously and correctly translate updates at this level of abstraction to the underlying tables?
Mm.
Now, there is it's been known for a long time in the relational database field that updating through views is a hard problem, okay? Because views tend to be underspecified. And so if you try to model, for example, if let's say that you remove an address from the set of addresses of a customer. How should you translate that update to the underlying database? Does it mean that you delete the address entirely from the database? Or does it mean that you just simply remove the connection that exists between the address and the customer? So because there is ambiguity in the way you should translate this, the view update problem is hard.
Absolutely.
Now, however, it's well known that if you can trace the pedigree of every record that contributes to the view by keeping the keys of the underlying rows that contribute to the view, you can then trace back the change. So what we did is we made sure that all the entities and relationships that we have actually preserve that traceability back to the original table. That's why in the entity data model, in order for an entity to be an entity, it has to have a key. It has to have an identifier for it.
Okay.
And so by looking at things like that, we were able to develop a theory that basically defines mapping, this entity to relationship mapping, in terms of bidirectional views. Okay? And that's, I think, one of the key contributions of the way in which we are approaching the entity framework. This type of a solution is very similar to, it's basically an object a kind of object relational mapping, and there are a whole bunch of tools right now in the market that perform that task. But we feel that the underlying principles that we have used to build our own entity framework is fairly sound, and it has a very rich and powerful mapping technology, and that's what we've done so far.
Fantastic. Now let's turn to the doctor here, professor. What do you think of that? I mean, what do you think of this? I mean, it's an implementation of your core ideas. I mean, let's talk about that.
It's very good. Let me show some pictures and explain the whole process. Basically, what we have is we have different kind of people, developers. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then we have, for example, this relational SQL Server. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is a relational DBMS. Okay. Then they have this SQL Server, etc. Now, then we have another layer. Here is this is the physical storage. Okay, this is the physical for storage level. And here is the so-called logical level. Now, the programmer developers, when they try to write a program, they have to think about what are the API, what are the interface, what are the structures. Mm. So here you have different kind of structures, tables, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So different tables. So that's the view they see. Now, then there's a mapping translation, between this kind of logical level to the physical level, the translation. Now, this translation is handled by DBMS, the software. Both programmer, developer, they don't see that. They don't need to worry about the storage structure. Now, what's happening in the past, or even today, is we want to model the world. So we have the real world here. We have person, and then we have maybe office buildings, okay, other things here. So when we have you as a person, whether it's developer or user or manager, anybody,
mm-hmm.
we always think, we have a conceptually, as I mentioned earlier, we look at the room, what do we see? We see different kind of entities and different kind of relationship between the entities. So what we have is we have here, we have the entities, and we have the relationships. Then we can also see the entity type. We classify them into different types and relationship type. Okay, so this is a now. So what we have is we have person. This is one particular person. But we can say person is a type. There are many different types of person. Then we can see one office building, building 35. Okay, it's one office building. But there are multiple buildings here. Now, so people usually think the world, and they want to model the world, they want to manipulate the world, and that they are picture of the world. So what we have is we basically have, so this is, your people think this way, from your think this way. Now, how do we get into something, into a SQL Server or other DBMS product? Basically, there are two parts. One is called schema, relational schema. Okay, the schema of the database. The other is the data itself. Okay, data. So there are two parts. The data is organized, on the logical level by the schema. But a schema means how many tables, what's the column name, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And how do we organize that? It turns out, most people doing today is something called, started with something called, so-called entity ownership diagram. So-called ER diagram. So you have something called person, and then person, maybe, so this is the office building. So person works in office building. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which person work on which office building? It could be, this could be many to many type of relationship. A person could work for many in many buildings, and many each building could have many person.
Sure.
Yeah. So this is type of thing. Then you have the project. Now person can also, assign to a project, to projects. Now this is the notation I'm using more often. Use the diamond shape thing to represent relationship. Some people using a straight line, okay? But notation is not very crucial. The important thing is we all usually think this way in terms of entity type, relationship type. So what we usually have is instead of thinking this way, we are basically building something like this kind of diagram. We take our mental picture. Now, as you may notice, we can see some of the physical thing, like a person. Some office building is a physical thing. But a project, do we see a concrete thing? We don't.
Mm.
It's something exists in your mind. So we have some kind of picture like that. Now, this is the type of thing, we start with that thing, and then we go through a process, and convert that to the relational schema, okay? So this is a conversion process. Okay? There are specific rules how to convert the entity diagram into the relational schema, and there are a lot of conversion tools available to automatically do the conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when you develop that, so this type of process is called logical database design process. Okay? So there's a group people specialized doing this in most organizations. They are doing this, you know, model their, what the needs of the corporation, and then they started this, and then they either do that manual conversion or using tool to convert to a relational schema. And then based on that, they populate the data for the data of the database. Mm-hmm. So they're creating that, then they give this schema, this relational schema, to those people, to the developer. They will say, okay, look at the schema. Mm. This is the thing, when you try to do a application, developing application program, you look at that, you run your program based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, so, but this one, as we just discussed, it may not be very natural to the developer. Maybe they're divided into many different tables, okay, which not very natural.
Sure.
But they have to remember that, and they have to make sure they don't make any mistake. Now, the entity framework, that is the good thing about this, is try to convert this, instead of just doing this purely as a database design process, and try to make it as a, one, make this as a application API level, okay? So instead of just doing this way, so we are taking this, okay? So the programmer, so you have it here to have this, okay? It's something you can say executable. Conceptual model, or something, this is the conceptual level. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of, you know, instead of doing this conversion, translation, people have to deal with this. Right now they have a high level abstraction. They can see something more natural to them. So they're directly writing program, whatever program they write. The code, whatever code you write, directly interface with this thing. And then this, doing the translation, and I think Jose just mentioned, all the things mapping are done, you know, by this, the software there. So you don't need to worry about that, okay? And that's less mistake, more productivity.
Sure.
Okay?
Now, let me just ask you
sure.
this. I mean, what was your original vision?
Yes.
I mean, did you think about the entity construct so that it could actually be used one day to make it easier for developers to write against complex relational databases, not have to think about the underlying complexity? I mean, what drove you to come up with this idea?
Sure. There are two
questions.
I think you have two questions.
Two or three.
Two or three questions.
I usually do that.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay. We answer some of the questions later. I think... initially, it has several components, including the database design, but it also have this executable type of thing. But it turned out this one take off quickly, okay? So become very, very...
So you're saying the use of the entity relationship model as a design tool...
As a design tool.
Became, took off
took
right
off
away.
Right away, okay? Right away become very popular. And initially, was not only for design relational database, but also other type of database, like a hierarchical database, like IMS, IBM's IMS, and Colossal type of database at that time. Because relational at that time was just starting. And it turned out, after relational model become more popular, DBMS, and they find out, as I mentioned earlier, the normalization purely algorithm doesn't solve the problem. So people want to see how they can design the relational schema. So they say, oh, this is really good. We start with the ER diagram and then we convert that. So in the late 80s, early 90s, there's a lot of activity to develop a tool to support the process.
Mm.
So this one take off very, very quickly. And this one, there are people have attempted to do that a couple times. And for different kind of reason, it wasn't as successful, okay, as expected. But right now, I think this entity framework is really very, very promising, and can make this really happen. Now, so that's one question. The other question is, why did I come up with this idea?
That's a fun one.
A lot of people are asking you that question. And so travel around the world, give you a talk. Say, how come? And after thinking or was trying to puzzle myself, and find out, it turned out, maybe related to my Chinese heritage.
Ah.
Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, it turned out the Chinese character, Chinese language, have this kind of modeling concept. Your Chinese language character, we look at, is that icon type of language. So something represents the world. You have a character for sun, a character for moon, a character for something. Mm. And there's a concept of abstraction and the composition. So it's treated me very interesting, and I started to give a talk about that around the world too, and people find it very intriguing. And then anytime I find out there are other languages also become very related to Chinese language, like for example the Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Mm.
Okay, so I started to collect a lot of books on that. So I actually purchased like 20 books of that. And so I become a local expert on that subject too.
That's fascinating. So that's incredibly interesting. So the idea was born out of the notion of your native language.
Right.
Because the symbolic representation of Chinese are entities.
That's correct.
In a sense.
Yes.
We look at these beautiful pictures and patterns. Very incredibly interesting.
So yeah, so we also were aware of the entity relationship model has had an influence in industrial products all along, starting with software analysis and design tools. However, we always, because there wasn't really the entity relationship model wasn't an executable runtime, a target data manager.
Mm-hmm.
People had to go through all those translations. We kind of joke about this design phase in the sense that almost every significant software engineering project has a database design phase where we use the entity relationship model, right? And then we build these humongous diagrams that cover wall to wall.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the project progresses in its life cycle down to the actual implementation, we see that the original design stays pinned to the wall, and it's over time starts sort of like becoming less and less related to the way in which the actual system is built, right? Because it's hard to evolve the design along with the implementation, right?
Sure.
And so by being able to just have a system that supports that abstraction, you can just make sure that your design and the implementation stay in sync all the way.
Okay.
And so...
And this is because if the design changes, the underlying design...
You have to change your mappings, you have to change your entity definitions, your relationship definitions. There is no way you can actually build the system unless you actually change the model itself. Yeah.
Very interesting. So where is all this going? I mean, let's talk about that. How has your idea evolved over the years? I mean, let's talk about what's your thinking in terms of the future of this entity construct.
Okay, I think after I wrote a paper 30 years ago, there have been a lot of activities and a lot of people, also both industry and academia, working in the area. So each year we have a conference, so-called entity relationship conference. Or conceptual modeling conference, so people present ideas, exchange ideas. So being developed, there's a lot of new ideas being proposed, and so it's very, very encouraging. And I think if we look into the future, certainly entity framework is one very promising product type of direction. But in terms of research, there's also try to make the model more active, and means incorporate the time dimension and type of things.
Mm. Yep. Excellent. And as Jose mentioned earlier, the notion of actually applying it to the database itself, to the underlying infrastructure for managing relationships and stuff.
Right.
Of course, you mentioned that's a hard problem.
Right.
That would be very interesting.
We hope that by building this higher level abstraction, we are going to improve the life of the application developer
mm-hmm.
by making them more productive. I mean, today, every significant application, right,
mm-hmm.
Has this built-in layer of mapping, a data access layer that actually abstracts that mapping, right? Because all applications need to, at some point, map
mm-hmm.
The data in those tables to the structures of the application, right?
Sure.
So somebody has to do that work. And today, most of the applications do that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What we are trying to do with this is to provide this higher level of abstraction as a core piece of the infrastructure, as a core piece of the plumbing, so that all the application developers can move up to actually solve business problems, which is the things they really want to do,
mm-hmm.
and move away from the plumbing of this mapping, right?
Absolutely.
And so we are also, as a platform vendor, building a runtime that is able to scale, perform,
mm-hmm.
be secure, right,
mm-hmm.
and take all those, take care of all those abilities
sure.
that our customers expect out of a system from Microsoft.
Sure.
And so moving forward, so there is the improvement of productivity for the developer. There is also the improvement in the reduction of redundant code that we have in our various services, right? So we will be able to build SQL tools, replication, reporting, and various kinds of services
mm-hmm.
Using a common core piece of infrastructure. So we will be direct consumers of that technology in the way we build SQL Server itself.
Fantastic. I mean, that's an important point.
And over time, I can see, for example, these concepts of entities migrating into the relational engine as core concepts that are
mm-hmm.
offered natively in the database. So that's the future.
Absolutely. I mean, and that probably would improve, I can't say improve performance, but improve efficiency, perhaps, by building it directly into the engine.
Right.
But that's a challenging problem, right? I mean, whenever you add layers of abstraction, there's extra work you have to do to maintain what is expected before there was that abstraction.
Correct. So the idea is that as we are introducing, and that's a careful balance of
mm-hmm.
engineering, because as we are adding this, it's very tempting whenever you add a layer of abstraction to try to be very expressive and add a whole bunch of semantics to this model, right?
Mm-hmm.
Have all sorts of flexibility, increase the power of, say, the constraints that you want to model, right? And then lose track of the fact that whatever you describe into your data model has to land into a particular implementation at some point, right?
Sure.
So here, the careful balance for us is to make sure that the concepts that we introduce into the entity data model are concepts that preserve the efficiency, scalability, security that people are used to receiving from a database system like SQL Server.
Absolutely.
Okay. So as we add these concepts of entities, and you are, you know, querying over properties of the entity, you
mm-hmm.
want to make sure that accessing a property of an entity is as efficient as accessing a column from a record.
Cool.
And so that is always that sort of like a benchmark that,
mm-hmm.
that we try to remain close to.
Now, I mean, from what I can gather, it seems as though an entity kind of conceptual API layer could actually hit any type of relational database, right?
Right.
So it's any kind of database that supports the relational construct.
Right. So that's an interesting point. One of the things that we did with the ADL.NET framework is that we build this entity services abstraction, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is this box right here, right?
Yeah.
But we actually layer it on top of the ADL.NET provider,
mm-hmm.
which has been part of the ADL.NET framework for a long time.
Sure.
Right? So let's call this the ADL.NET provider model, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is the abstraction that where you basically access database on connections command data readers. We have one provider to access data from SQL Server, mm-hmm. SQL Client, right? But there are providers to Oracle, DB2, and many other systems.
Sure.
So by layering this system on top of various providers, we can guarantee that the entity framework can actually enable a richer abstraction against a variety of database systems.
Excellent.
And so we are actually happy to see that with a common implementation of these very powerful client-side view engine,
mm-hmm.
we can enable access, higher-level access to any kind of data from different data sources.
Excellent. So, Dr. Chen,
yeah.
Are we doing the right thing? These guys, I mean, what do you think? What's your feedback on this? I mean, it's certainly brilliant engineering and thinking here, but let's talk about it.
Yes, I think it's very, very exciting and promising.
Uh-huh.
I think particularly when we have this kind of, we talk about this, as I said, the logical design process being mm-hmm. taking off very quickly, but the other thing, this using conceptual model as the API interface, and I think it's right now we see the entity framework, it's doing very well, and I think the future direction Jose described would be great. Now, the good thing is, if we have that together, we can do a lot of things to extend the theory, to modify, and to build a much better for the future. Yeah.
Excellent.
So this is great because, you know, basically to increase the productivity of developers,
mm-hmm.
what we see is this tendency for people to write less code.
Sure.
Right? I mean, in some sense, higher level abstractions like SQL basically abstract navigation over a whole bunch of records and tables and sets
mm-hmm.
in terms of higher level constructs, right?
Sure.
So as we are able to move up the level of abstraction, then we can start putting together other currents that we see in the software industry, like model-driven development, so that you can start defining applications at a high level,
mm-hmm.
declaratively, and then have tools that map the implementation of those applications into concrete terms. So we are moving up the level of abstraction and trying to get to much increased levels of productivity for application developers.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to mention that because Microsoft, as a platform company, we love abstraction and making it easier for people to be productive. But we also love not taking away the ability. So it's and Anders mentioned this in one of the interviews that I did. You know, there's the notion of abstracting things away and adding levels of abstraction, but and giving ways to get back, you know, programmer to get back to the core engine,
right?
To not be confined to the level of abstraction, but being able to get back when you have to get lower and do some low-level engineering, you still can. I mean,
correct.
I just wanted to point that out.
Right, and that is, you know, he's very, very, very correct on that.
Uh-huh.
In fact, one of the things about the entity framework is that we on top of the entity framework, then we acknowledge the existence of presentation layers, right? That turn these entities into artifacts that are amenable for different uses. So, for example, you want to have entities torn into CLR objects, perhaps because the programming environment in which you are is the .NET programming language. So, we have an object services layer here, which basically turns entities into objects. And the mapping between objects and entities is really straightforward. And all the wonderful innovations that are going on right now in the area of language integrated query, Link,
sure.
can plug in right in here and
excellent.
You know, enable, you know, this higher productivity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, you can think about perhaps using the entity framework in the way you interact with web services. So, for example, being able to serialize these entities in the form of XML and then provide XML access through tools like XSLT, XPath, even XQuery becomes very interesting, right?
Sure.
Because then you can use all this mapping infrastructure to be able to get to that.
Okay? Wow.
And then similarly, if you are building data services like replication, reporting, and so on, you know, you can start building an ecosystem of services that actually leverages the value of this higher level abstraction.
Excellent.
So this is pretty much the general direction of where we would like to go.
All right. Well, hey, I mean, I thank you guys for your time. It's an honor to meet you, Dr. Chen.
Thank you.
I probably should go read his paper that he wrote 35 years ago. And we look forward to seeing how this is going to evolve. And thank you for your time, Jose. You guys are doing great work.
Well, thank you.
And this is very good. Again, thank you for
your
time.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Thank you.